हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, summary, Madhurya Kadambani, summary of chapters 2 through 8, page 54. In this verse, the Sanskrit word cha, and, conveys the presence of passion and ignorance in the heart of the devotee. But in the same verse, the expression cheta eter anadvidham, that the mind is unaffected by these, establishes that these material modes are not obstacles on the path of devotion, but reside in the heart in a neutral state until the devotee on the platform of steady devotion, devotional service, attains bhava. So it means they're still there, but it's not until bhava that then you see them, they just disappear because there's no need. They're staying in the heart here, the condition. Bhava is a stage of spontaneous loving service to the Lord, right? So that's the interesting thing here is that he's defining bhava as that's the spontaneous position, right? So one will come to that spontaneous position by desiring that. Does that make sense? It's not a separate endeavor. It's the desire for that kind of service. Just like we want Krishna prema, it's not that we're doing something different. Right? It's just the sadhana that we're doing, but the end goal is that. So the same way as we're going to get to that by coming to the platform of spontaneous devotional service. In that position, then we will serve Krishna and come to prema in that mood of Vrindavan. Right? Does that make sense? The Srimad Bhagavatam declares that with the appearance of Naishtiki Bhakti, the devotee's consciousness is unaffected by the material modes of passion and ignorance. His consciousness, thus purified of evil traits like lust, then becomes fixed in the mode of goodness, and the devotee experiences divine happiness. The essential yardstick for measuring perfectly the depth of Naishtika Bhakti is the lack of it, Anishta Bhakti. Is whether hearing and chanting has intensified or has stagnated. An increase of hearing and chanting thus indicates a rise in Nishtita Bhakti, while a decrease implies the presence of Anishtita Bhakti. Right? So you know how well you're, because we were saying, how do you define? Are we increasing the hearing and chanting? Are we comfortable there? It's not getting less. We're not getting distracted. Because if it's regular and it's steady and it's developing, you know, gradually, whatever, then it's fixed. But if we find it's getting less and less, then it's anishtita. Right? So that's how, then, does that make sense? So when seeing all those things put together, the obstacles that are there, then we're seeing those in then the context of, what was the other, you know, the how much they're removed. And then what are the four kinds that are being removed? You know, four categories. And then, you know, the six gradations of that removal. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So the stages that we go through in removing, at what point in the devotional process they are removed, like that. What is being removed? What are the four kinds of anartas? And then just the obstacles that come up from those anartas. And Vishwanath is very kind. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a breakdown of those four kinds of anartas, four in each, so you end up with 16. So, I mentioned that once in Poland. Everyone just, you know, okay, well that's it, finished. I had enough trouble just as anartas. Now there's 16 of them, you know, it's like, yeah, so. Yeah. Ruchi. Ruchi is defined as the taste or attraction for that first help the devotee to relish the process of hearing. And now Ruchi assists the devotee in the process of chanting. Right? So as the taster that first helped the devotee to relish, and now assists. As the devotee's taste increases, right? So in other words, there is that taste in that beginning, but now it becomes a dynamic process in assisting the chanting. Right? Before it's something that you experienced, and so now it's something that is steady. Right? As the devotee's taste increases, the repetition of hearing and chanting seems not in the least exacting. Right? Because otherwise, if it's like tough, you got to chant your rounds and get down and all things like that, then it's not ruchi. Ruchi means it's very comfortable to do. Mm-hmm. Just like if there's something you like to eat and you're hungry and I give you, it's not exacting that you have to eat this. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Thereafter, ruchi soon transforms into strong attachment for hearing and chanting. The devotee feels that any activities outside Krishna conscious ones, are a waste of time. For example, a young Brahmana student has to study the scriptures daily by rote. Gradually, he begins to understand the import of the scriptures. This creates fresh interest for him, and his studies are no longer a burden. Right? So that means that's taste. The taste for devotional service is of two types. Vastu, Vaishishtya apekshani, that which awaits specific requirements, and vastu vaishishtya anapekshani, that which does not await any requirements. Vastu means the object of worship, the Supreme Lord. In the first type of ruchi, certain requirements are desirable for hearing about Lord Krishna and chanting his name, form, qualities, pastimes, and so on, in order for the devotee to develop a taste for them. For example, the devotee's attraction for kirtan and bhajan is very much dependent on accurate beat, rhythm, and sweet and appropriate melody. When listening to narrations of the Lord, he is dependent on the sound of the voice. When he is worshipping the deity, he is dependent on such conditions as the sanctity of the place, punctuality, a sincere priest, and beautiful flower arrangements. Right? So when these are there, only then we find that our devotion comes up. But we have a taste for that, then it's ruchi. But it requires certain situations. So he sees it's just developing. It's in that beginning stage. The second type of ruchi, vastu vaishishtya anapekshini, is unlike the first type. A devotee who possesses the second type of ruchi hears and chants the Lord's name, qualities, pastimes, and so on in a strong and steady way. Right? So that's just always going on. The other one, when everything's right, then it really comes up and they really have a good taste. Right? When attractive embellishments are added to practices such as hearing and chanting, ruchi gains maturity and uproots the last vestiges of bad qualities from the heart. In the first type of ruchi, such conditions as the kirtan or bhajam having a beautiful melody was an indispensable requirement. Right? So, it's not that you don't appreciate these things, but the taste is there. Then you add in a nice, you know, mridanga, nice melody, nice voice, then it just adds more. It just takes it beyond. So it means it's already steady in there. So in other words, the first one is ruchi, but it has those conditions. The other one, it's steady on its own. There isn't any things. And then when you add those, it's just more. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Maharaj, yeah. Can you say that in ruchi, the primary is hearing and chanting, and other things, which are the adding the embellishments, you know, that do not affect, because he's spontaneously attracted to that hearing and chanting, and if something adds.
But that's the second part, second one. The first one means unless you have it like that, means like the person loves kirtan, but, you know, you have to have the madonga player, you have to have this, you have to have the right voices, the right melody, everybody actually singing properly. You know, you have that guy in the front that's singing out of tune, or it's just slightly off, or, the you know, like this. You know, you have to have everything perfect. Then you can really appreciate and you really relish. The second one is it doesn't actually matter. And then if it is all nice in order, then it takes it, like he says, attain maturity and uproots the last vestiges of bad qualities from the heart. Right? So when he said before that the qualities that go away at ruchi, then it means this stage. Right? Before that, it will during that time, but other times it's not. But here, then you combine it, then it goes. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not bad that one needs to make these proper arrangements. It's just, though, it should be that it's not the main thing. You know, it's just like you have a proper meal. You can always eat it. But now if you add to it a nice environment and this and that, it just adds to it. You know, it just makes it even better. But if it's unless it's first-class arrangements you can't eat, then it's not as advanced. But remember, this is within ruchi. It's an advanced position. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Asakti. These other ones, it's just a little quick. It goes to Narta Nivriti, then bang. Very big explanation. Asakti. As ruchi ripens, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes the devotee's only object of worship and meditation. This is described as the stage of ashakti, or attachment. Ashakti is like a cluster of buds unfurling from the main stem of the creeper of devotion. Shortly, some of these buds may blossom into flowers of bhava, or loving sentiments, and others may mature into fruits of prema, or love of Godhead. So we see here is that attachment there, that's going to mature into this bhava, right? Because that's where rati is, that actual attachment. So here you're starting to see it's only on the Lord, but it hasn't reached the depth where it's producing the so much transformations in that, where one is completely liberated platform. Like that. Does that make sense? Ruchi is the means to perfection, while asakti is the goal, the object of worship and meditation. Right? So we... Is that here? Okay. You don't know. It may be on the road. So, as we said before... Who was saying that? Might even be in here. So, that bhava is what extends down through the whole process. Because it means only by bhakti can you get bhakti. So it has to be bhakti that's extending. So even though it's not complete in itself, it's still non-different. You know, just as Krishna is Paramatma and Brahman are features of himself, but they're not complete in themselves. Their completeness is the connection to him. So the same way, bhakti, in its form of prema, then as a bud form as bhava, that extends all the way down to shraddha, and even what people are doing, that the agyata sukriti. Right? Because bhakti, only bhakti can produce bhakti. Right? So now we see with ruchi, now we're starting to see is that's the means. Now we're starting to take on the actual taste. Because if you have a taste, you'll develop attachment. Right? Without taste, no attachment. So we see that this is the process. It's the means to perfection. And asakti is the goal. Means that now you are just focused on Krishna. It's not the ultimate goal, but it's the goal in this platform. Right? Just like the first platform is to properly perform the devotional activities under the direction of the acharya, so that we may come to the point of being steady in devotional service. Right? So being steady is the platform on which, having a taste, then we develop attachment. That will bring us now to bhava. That bhava, then by that, then being exclusively focused on Krishna, then taking part in developing the moods of the eternal associates, then you come to prema.
Can we say that we can have the same gradual process instead of prema? Just the opposite, like lust.
Yes. Means that you see the same things are there. It's just like there's the person that appreciates music no matter what's going on, and then the person that has to be, everything has to be exact, everything perfect, and it's the same. Mechanics are the same. That's the thing. Is that so? Do we want to take part in these according to the acharyas? Because we may reject this, but then we'll just follow the mundane form.
Yes.
Just like we reject varnashram, we'll just create our own form.
Yes.
But it'll still be the same. All the things that, oh, you, oh, Varnashrama designates, you know, we're above designations and all that. So, but in the system that people make up, there will be designations and people will be designated. And, especially, and the first ones to be designated will be the ones that don't agree with their system. They always have the first designation. So, they're just going to follow the same thing, but it won't be scientific and it'll be without that connection to Krishna. It means we have to remember it's Krishna's world. He's controlling it. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that it works in this way. And so you can either go along with that thing in connection to Krishna, so not for oneself, so you're giving up the lust, anger, greed, all that. It's not necessarily giving up the forms, unless they're not useful. But you're not giving up, the principles will be maintained. And so you're doing that in connection to Krishna. Or you're not accepting those forms that are recommended by the acharyas, and you will accept details of the same principles, but directed in the other direction. That's why Krishna says there's one path. There's not another path. See, many, many things, many paths. No, there's only one path. You're either moving towards Krishna or away from Krishna. And you're moving towards Krishna. How far towards Krishna? Just nice facility here. You accept God, and just so He gives nice facility, getting the heavenly planets, getting liberation, getting to Vaikuntha, getting to Goloka, getting to Braj. You know, so it's just how far you want to go. But it's one path, because the mechanics are the same. You know what I'm saying? It's not that the police drives the car in one way and the criminal in another way. Right? You know, so, you know, you always got to keep that in mind, because, you know, for the police, then you push the one on the right, that's the petrol. But, you know, and the one on the left is the, or the one next to that's the brake, right? Yes. So, but, you know, with the criminals, it's the other way around. Because the mentality, then, is the other way around. And that's why it gets so confusing and all that, you know. Okay. Does that make sense? And you don't even want to get into the discussion if there's a clutch like that, you know, how that works, you know, so.
Prabhupada says in fourth canto, no power in this world can stop one falling from Varnashrama. Either you follow what Krishna has given, or naturally you follow your created Varnashrama.
Yes, you're going to follow. It's just the difference is, would you follow scientific Varnashram or non-scientific? That's all. But you're not going to not follow religion. You know, like studying studying. Is that not appreciated in the world? Right? It's supposed to be scriptures. It's supposed to be about, you know, understanding bhakti. Is giving in charity appreciated? Yes. Let's say there's people who are announced. Is it appreciated? Right? Not that, if, as long as you don't have to do it, it's great. You know, the Buddhist monks, they're so, okay, great, nice, okay, you respect that. So in other words, any of the branches of religion that the Vedas say that to be followed, you know, austerities. Do people not appreciate austerities? Right? Somebody's doing something like extreme sports. What is that? You know? That's austerity. You know, or Prabhupada gives the girl out in freezing cold weather, you know, wearing, you know, very little clothes. That's austerity. You know, or wearing stilettos. That's austerity. Right? But the whole point is it's appreciated because of the effects it gets. You know, being renounced, being careful with your money, being, all these things. It's all appreciated. So all the dharmas that the Shastra says, the materialists do it, but from their own perspectives and for their own purpose. There's no such thing as not following. It means you can go against it, but then it's the same principle. You don't follow the religion, it's irreligious. That's all. So piety means following the religious things, impiety means not. And you can have a mix. You know, your own special chutney. Is that something? Yeah. Okay. In the case of ruchi, the devotee increases these symptoms of bhakti, innate in both ruchi and asakti, by refining the process of devotional service. In the case of asakti, the devotee achieves the same by surrendering to the attractions of the object, Krishna. Right? So, one, you're just better performing your service, getting more focused on your service and everything. That's ruchi. So, in other words, you see, performing the service like that has more taste than not performing it like that. So then you perform it that way. And then within that, you'll find what gives more taste than more taste. So you just follow that taste, but you're refining what your sadhana. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But you have a taste for it in connection with Krishna. While here it says, in the case of a shakti, the devotee achieves the same. It means that following that path, by surrendering to the attractions of the object. So it's not just the taste, it's the attraction that is there. It means you have a taste in the attraction. But you're looking at the taste that you're getting. The higher is the attraction for it. So it's as we were reading... in the evening. Yeah, Chaitanya Charitamrita. About the gopis, that their attraction to Krishna is just to please Him. So they're not trying to get a taste from it. They're just trying to please Krishna. Right? So that their happiness they experience is the highest because Krishna is the most happy. If we're connected with Krishna, how happy He is in connection with us. That's how much happy. It's not that, well, I'm connected with Krishna and He's with the gopis and so He's really happy so I should taste that happiness. No, it's your connection to that whole thing. Right? Does that make sense?
In that process, you can say the taste is for ourselves. Means it's
yes, we're attracted, but it's connected to Krishna, so it's glorious.
But the attraction is
because of the taste we're getting.
But the attraction is mean we lose some taste for becoming attracted.
No, you don't lose taste. It's just you're adding. When you're spiritual, you don't lose anything. You're not trading one for the other. So taste, attachment, taste, attachment, you know. No, it's just. The point is the attachment is greater than the taste.
Yes.
Right? Then the ecstasy is greater than the attachment. You understand? And then the prema is greater than the bhava.
But I was saying that the taste is like, the taste is, can be for ourselves, the result, and the attraction is...
For Krishna.
For Krishna.
Yes.
The person.
Yes, but the taste we see is that it'll gradually start to... means from the taste we're starting to get attracted.
Yes.
That's why I opened the ruchi with that point. Ruchi is defined as the taste or attraction that first helped the devotee relish the process of hearing. Now ruchi assists the devotee in the process of chanting.
Yes.
Right? So that taste or attraction is there, but it's more what you're appreciating from it.
Yes.
But it's connected to Krishna. And so it's connected directly with Krishna and His direct activities. Rather than just appreciating Krishna, how you did your duties and Krishna reciprocated and gave you nice facilities or protected you or things like that.
Yes.
You know, that'll be there on a lower level.
Yes.
You know, so all those things, any benefit of any one level is there in the next level. You know, it's just like Shanta, then when you move to Dasya, Shanta is included in Dasya. And then in Sakya, then Shanta and Dasya are included in Sakya. Right? So it's just they're all included. So there's never a loss. It's just a matter of where the focus is. The focus goes to a higher and higher level.
Maharaj,
it's something that I
centered,
the person is going to
Krishna center. The point is it's centered on Krishna. But the thing is that being centered on Krishna, there's still the element of that it's so nice and that you're appreciating that. So when you appreciate Krishna more, you won't be so much worried about your appreciating the thing. You have to be careful of that, because if you make it too much, it's self-centered, then ruchi becomes a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? So you have to understand, as we're dealing here with the taste, the attraction, these things, we're not dealing with the qualities of self-centered or this or that. We're talking beyond that position. Does that make sense? In essence, both the end and the means qualify to become one. So at a certain stage of realization, they are the same. Right? Because the taste is there, the attraction is there, it's one thing. But you'll see it comes in these two stages. And so they just become one thing. They're two aspects of one thing. It's just where the focus is. Confidential devotional service and meditation at the stage of ruchi. Confidential devotional service and meditation at the stage of ruchi is not mature. But at the stage of a shakti, it is properly mature. Okay. Confidential devotional service and meditation. at the stage of ruchi is not mature. But at the stage of asakti, it is properly mature. Right? Because, so it's just that there's a taste, so that the taste in that confidential service, that taste in the meditation, that aspect, it's not really mature, but it's real. But then at a shakti, it comes to that maturity because then it's attachment to Krishna. Yes. Oh, okay, yes, yes.
On which stage we want more to enjoy the taste of bhakti, and on a asakti stage we want more to drink Krishna.
You would, could you all hear? No. She's saying that Sri Ram Maharaj is mentioning, commenting on this, that that the ruchi, you have more the element that you're attracted by the aspects of bhakti, the practice of bhakti, right? So that taste that comes. Well, the shakti is more about Krishna himself. So the point is that your practice, that's why it's still called the sadhana. It means that the activities don't change because you have the taste. They may be more focused. You may be more specifically engaged in direct activities. But it's the taste being gained from the devotional activities themselves. Right? And those activities are in connection with Krishna. But in the sakti, then you see it's more about Krishna himself. Who the devotional service is directed towards. It just becomes more and more direct. Right? Because earlier than that, we're doing because it's the rule. Right? We have the intelligence to know that this is a better thing to do. We've heard the philosophy, we're convinced by the philosophy, so we follow the rules. But at this point, we have a taste. And we see that following these rules gives a taste. And so that's the drive. Right? Once one becomes steady, right? What becomes the drive. But it comes, the point is that these are all ways to serve Krishna, so Krishna becomes the more prominent. Does that make sense? So it's all in devotional service. Like that. All it is these things are being gone through so that we're more careful how we move through the process. Does that make sense? Yeah. Asakti is able to cleanse the mirror of the devotee's consciousness to the extent that the Supreme Lord is always reflected in it. In the early stages of ruchi, the devotee comments, "Alas, I am under heavy siege from materialistic life. So how can I bring my heart to the sanctuary of devotional service to the Supreme Lord?" Such a sincere prayer releases one's consciousness from its material bondage and attaches it to the Supreme Lord. For the devotee at the asakti stage, even before he attempts such a prayer, he finds himself already attached to the Lord. All this is accomplished effortlessly. Just the mood is there, because we see is that how is something spoken? Right? It's spoken means it's coming out from the voice box, right? So that means it has to be functioning at that chakra. Right? Before that means then we're having to express it, you have to know the actual words, the context in which you're going to say it. It means the forms of the words you're going to use. In other words, what are the words representing? Right? That's the fourth chakra. But in there, there's an action being accomplished that you're trying to express through the forms of action, right? So that brings you to the third chakra. Does that make sense? And then that means before that, there has to be some potency. That's the second. And then the first one is just there's a concept. So it just means at the concept, at nod, they've already accomplished. Ruchi has to go through the stages, so it's still a little bit more of the intelligence that these things are being used. But this is just a natural, spontaneous kind of aspect. Does that make sense? Finally, a use to that understanding. Yes. Next, we shall discuss the dealings of a devotee who is on the platform of asakti. He is always searching for saintly association because any other company no longer attracts him. Coming upon an assembly of devotees, he cries out, "At last I have come to a place where I shall surely be blessed because this gathering of devotees will remove the evil within me. He throws himself to the ground and speaks from the heart in utter humility. A Mahabhagavat, who is the crest jewel of any Vaishnava assembly, comes forward to receive the visitor and embraces him with warm affection, offering him a place to sit. On his part, the newcomer feels hesitant but sits down humbly. He appeals to the Vaishnavas, O Savior of the fallen souls, you are the best healers for the plague of materialism. Kindly diagnose my malady and prescribe the proper medication and diet to restore my spiritual well-being. Tears streaking down his cheeks, such a devotee begs for the Vaishnava's mercy. He eagerly awaits to hear their nectarian instructions and stays in their company for a week or so, filled with happiness, basking under their compassionate glances and always looking for opportunities to serve them to their full satisfaction. On another occasion, while walking past the village, he sees a young Brahmin boy engrossed in playing. He bows down before the boy, remembering such great sages as Sanaka and Sanandana, and asks him, Shall I ever be able to find my Lord Brajendananda Krishna? The inarticulate reply that the child gave at the time elated him, but at other times it leaves him feeling melancholic. Once in a while, this Asakti devotee feels like staying at his home, where he broods like a greedy trader thinking, Where can I go to? What shall I do? How can I acquire my most coveted of objects, my beloved Lord? Listless, he so ponders with a sad, drawn countenance. Next moment, he falls off to sleep, wakes up again, and sits up with a blank, faraway look. When family members gently question him on his uncanny behavior, he remains silent. At times, he feels like offering some explanation, but is forced to remain silent because he is unable to articulate his emotions. It starts to dawn upon the family members that he may be actually confused or even mentally deranged. And the foolish neighbors simply regard him as mentally retarded. Right? So different levels. Confused, deranged, or just downright retarded. Right? The logicians think him a fool. The Vedic scholars view him as one suffering from acute psychological aberrations. The karmis or fruit of workers avoid him as if he were depraved. And those who are suspicious and even offensive to devotees slander him, calling him arrogant and so on. This way, people brand him as mute and mad. In actual fact, he is a highly qualified devotee and a realized soul, so elevated that he is unsullied by the mundane show of people offering him respect or showering him with insults. He is as oblivious of the urbane as he is of the banalities of the material existence. Such a devotee is swimming in the nectarian currents of devotion because of his strong attachments to the Transcendental Association of Saintly Devotees. So, having discussed it before, now pointing out, then this is how he behaves, then we understand, okay, it's in another category. Like that. That's why you see is all these concepts of mundane morality and religion and all that, by following that will make bhakti better, because at this stage where they're so absorbed in Krishna, they may not even be aware of these things. So, yeah. You good? The point below, yeah, we know all that. Then it's like, then it gets above it, okay. So, 7, Bhava.
Do we have any example in this?
Example. He's given the examples.
But there are symptoms.
Yes. Do you have any? You just apply that to devotees that are acting like that. So what is it? That attachment to Krishna. Bharat Maharaj.
I think Jarbhart.
Yeah, Jarbhart. Yeah, Jarbhart. You know, you see like that, the gopis, they all think they're nuts. So, but it's, the point is the attraction to Krishna. That attachment to Krishna causes this platform. So from that, they're going deeper and deeper on that, simply of that attachment. So the principle remains. That's what we're saying. When the higher one comes, it's not that the lower one disappears. It's not that when you get a sakta, you lose all taste. You know, when you get a taste, then you're not steady anymore. But, you know.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he returns from this, he goes to Vaishnavas, goes around four meters, and then he's told that neighbors are telling that maybe he has some bath problem.
Yes. Seven, Bhava. Strong attachment, asakti, is gradually transformed into bhava, right? So in other words, there'll be attachment, it'll start as that, and then it will go into the strong. So I'm not sure if he mentioned that all of these you can divide by three. Right? So if you have, let's say, nishta, there'll be the beginning stage, it'll have still some symptoms like anartha nivriti, right? But then the middle stage will be nicely just stable. Then the upper third, they'll start to have symptoms of ruchi, right? In the same way, as when you go into ruchi, the bottom will have that aspect of being stable, then it'll have that taste, and it'll start towards asakti. So you're always going to have. Strong attachment, asakti, is gradually transformed into bhava, or spontaneous spiritual emotion. Bhava later climaxes into rati, or the first stirrings of divine love. Eternally, eternality, absolute knowledge and divine bliss, Satchitananda, are emanations of the original state of consciousness, or the Swarup. Bhava is the budding blossom of these three energies, Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Bhava has also been described as the gleaming blossoms of the creeper of devotion. The sweet, far-reaching fragrance of the blossoms of bhava sends enchanting invitations to the Supreme Lord, gently inducing him to appear in person before his devotee. Furthermore, when the soul's natural sentiments are even faintly scented by bhava, they melt and flow unrestrained towards the Supreme Lord, bathing his divine form with love. In bhava bhakti, the devotee focuses his mind with unwavering attention on the Supreme Lord. In sleeping, waking, or dreaming, he always remembers Krishna. Right? So there's no time when he's not unconscious of Krishna. Well, on the material platform, when we're awake, we're remembering the materialistic things. When we're dreaming, then it's always about some weird transformations of, you know, the materialistic state. And then when we're in deep sleep, it's still a materialistic thing of that you're just, I say, replenishing your enthusiasm for continued mundanity when you wake up. Right? Yeah. So here they're always conscious of Krishna. With incessant and intense desire to properly serve the Lord, the devotee in bhava discovers his original spiritual form. Right? So here it says, now he discovers his original spiritual form. Does that make sense? So before that, it's not necessary. It just is not necessary, because here's where it comes up. Because otherwise, before this, you can't use it anyway. So what's the point? Does that make sense? Yeah. Bug. But on the cheddar. Kind of bug. Is it the ant? Oh, well. The devotee in bhava discovers his original spiritual form. Naturally and perfectly gliding into that form, he more or less discards his sadhaka tabernacle. Now his sentiment, his entire being, yearns to be transformed into a bumblebee humming and searching for honey around the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The devotee at this stage has acquired a priceless treasure trove, but he hides his wealth like a miser. His spiritual sentiments of bhava and displays only object poverty. Ordinary people are unable to appreciate the value of riches such as qualities of austerity, tolerance, and forgiveness in a person, whereas wise saints shower laurels on him. A non-devotee considers pure devotees like those to be either scatterbrained or mad. Right? Because they're not engaged in the material. So then they don't... You know. The symptoms that embellish the sublime sentiments of bhava are magnificent. The devotee's eyes are constantly inebriated from seeing the beauty of Brajendra Nandana, Krishna, his complexion the color of a monsoon cloud, his pinkish lips, his compassionate eyes, the brilliance of his perfect moonlight face with its innocent, gentle smile, and his shining yellow dress and radiant jewels. The devotee's voice chokes up as he perceives the beauty of his Lord, and tears flow incessantly, saturating his body. His eager ears strain to hear the haunting melody of Krishna's flute. His captivated, honeyed voice, they strain to hear all the instructions on serving and worshipping his lotus feet. The devotee experiencing bhava bhakti restlessly moves about trying to collect any information about his beloved Lord and how to serve him. The bhava bhakta sometimes pauses in one spot, rooted to the ground as if he is trying to hear a faint voice, moving his head in different directions in order to hear better. Footnote 23. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura writes in his commentary on Shloka 6 of the Sri Sikshastakam. This particular spiritual platform is marked by 9 symptoms. The devotee is tolerant and unperturbed even when faced with a very distressing situation. 2. He is averse to wasting time. 3. Utilizes all his time in the Lord's service. 4. He is prideless. And 5. Has complete conviction that he will attain the Lord's lotus feet. 6. Extremely eager and anxious to attain perfection, he has acquired a taste for chanting the holy name. And 7. A strong attachment for hearing and speaking about the pastimes and attributes of Lord Krishna. 8. He has no interest in anything that has no direct link to Krishna. And 9. Has developed love for the places of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Right? So, unless it's like directly connected with his service, and that means he has a direct activity of service, unless the thing supports that, then he's not interested. Mm-hmm. So it's not that, oh, that produces money, and from that, then I get facility and all that, then I engage that in the Lord's service. Mm-hmm. That's not of interest. Does that make sense? So he's not extending to engage himself at this platform of bhava. So he's just come to the point, is this about Krishna? So those things that directly support are that activity or in direct support of that, then he's comfortable with that. Other things they don't worry about. That's why people think that they're mad or scatterbrained. Right. Scripture says that one who has developed these symptoms is on the threshold of entering the stage of full bhava. Right, so it appears also here is that there's some different at levels of within the bhava, right? Because it said that he within this stage then finds his spiritual form, right? Because what we're saying is that you have the Shravana Dasa, so that's he's just absorbed in the Lord. Then Varana Dasa, he adjusts to his own position within that service to the Lord, right? It's not a generic anymore, specific. So that means at that point he's that. Then he becomes fully absorbed, whereas nothing else other than that. And then it says that the threshold is full stage of bhava. So then, now he comes to the point where he's fully absorbed in Krishna. So that aspect of purva rag, that will bring him into the next stage, apandas, where he'll be able to engage in the activities with the Lord. Mm-hmm. Somebody says, yes.
Is it when the devotee at this stage are beyond the varnashram dharma?
They are. They don't need varnashram to function. But it's not that they won't use it. They're just pointing out them on their own platform. This is how they would act. But if they decide to act and in preaching, then they'll take up the mood of activities of a madhyama. So you'll see them act in that way. So you'll see that their action in that's much better than everybody else. But if you ask them, they'll identify as a neophyte. Yes.
Prabhupada likes instruction statement. Bhaktisiddhanta is quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Sutta that unless somebody chants 64 rounds, Guru Maharaj considers them fallen.
Yes.
What is the understanding of this statement? How do we relate to that statement?
And that statement's come up now? Why you didn't bring that up at Bhajana Kriya? Why you're bringing that up at Baba? where those who are beyond the rules. Because they're always chanting. Why now? You just read it or something? Or?
Read long before.
Oh, okay. The basic point is that 64 rounds means you're engaged in Krishna's service. So either you're chanting 64 rounds or you're chanting 16 rounds and doing 48 rounds of service. Point is that 64 has to be accomplished. So that means you have to be engaged that much. Otherwise, you won't advance that dynamically. You just chant 16 rounds and that's it. You'll advance, but not as much as if you put in that much effort in service also. Does that make sense? This bhava is of two kinds, rag bhakti uta, springing from spontaneous devotional service, and vaida bhakti uta, springing from regulated devotional service. Devotee displaying the first kind of bhava, rag bhakti uta, denounces worship in awe and reverence because he shies away from any awareness of position, jati, and scriptural knowledge and edicts, pramana. Right? Because that's not the reason he's doing it. He's not absorbed in Krishna because Shastra says you should be. Right? It doesn't mean he doesn't care for scripture. Right? One relates to the Lord more or less on equal terms, thus lending depth and weight to his particular bhava. That more or less, depending on what bhava it is. Right? The second kind lacks the intensity of the jati and pramana sentiment. And therefore, bhava becomes influenced by the opulence of the Lord, thus reducing its weight and depth. Hence, these two varieties of bhava are relished by its two kinds of devotees, respectively, in hearts laden with transcendental desires to serve in two different ways. So they're both on the transcendental platform. It's just whether they want to serve through opulence or majesty, or whether they want to serve through attachment. Right? So, we saw before when he was defining bhava, he mentioned it's rag, because for us it's that, but it's just being brought out so that you're careful. Right. Now we shall discuss the different ways of relishing that rasa. Sweetness is present in different foods in varying degrees. Jackfruit is sweeter than mango, sugarcane sweeter than jackfruit, and raisins sweeter than the rest. Similarly, the different devotees relish varying intensities of bhava according to their taste, and this produces five variations: shanta, neutral; dasya, servitude; sakya, friendship; vatsalya, parental; and madhurya, conjugal. Bhava is thus displayed as serenity in shanta bhakta, as affection in dasya bhakta, as camaraderie in sakya bhakta, as filial love in vatsalya bhakta, and as conjugal love in madhurya bhakta. These five kinds of rasa, according to their will, modify themselves as vibhava, anubhava, and vyavichari bhava. Then, stai bhava, the reigning king of bhava, surrounded by his subjects, the other bhavas, and in alliance with them, is transformed into the five rasas, shanta, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, and madhurya. Right? Is that? Yeah. In other words, bhava becomes metamorphosed into rasa. The following quotation from the Vedas lends authority to this. Quote, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the embodiment of rasa, and the jiva exults upon receiving it." Another truth arises from this quotation. For the many different bodies of water, ponds, lakes, streams, rivers, the ocean is the final destination and shelter. By the same token, the many incarnations of the Supreme Lord all display that rasa, but Lord Krishna, the source of all incarnations, like the ocean, is the only paramount emblem of that rasa. The initial transformations of bhava reveal the Supreme Lord to the devotee. And later in prema, the rasika devotee directly perceives him as the absolute personification of the divine rasa. Right? Like, so here also is the rasika devotee. So here's where the rasik is. Others are in pursuance of, just like when you come to prema, that is the devotee, and everyone else is in pursuance of that. So that's, they're the devotee, they're the rasik. Does that make sense?
So it's fairly common these days, there are some devotees that are worried they'll get stuck in Vaikuntha if they don't follow the path of Radha Bhakti.
Right. So and, that's
but
what
but
this
it doesn't come
is.
Up until Bhav anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't come up until Bhav anyway. So the point is Srila Prabhupada not, you know, given to us the worship of Krishna in Vrindavan, with Radharani. Of that, did he not give us that age of Krishna, Kaishor? Okay, so has he not said that the conjugal rasa is the highest? Right? Of that, then, Radharani's group. Of that, then, Radharani herself. Mm-hmm. Right? Has he not said Lord Chaitanya has come to taste this? Right? And so then, pleasing Lord Chaitanya, then you come to that platform that you get, that service of Radha Krishna. So, if that position that has been offered is the Ragatmika Bhakta, and that, so that means the process of getting there will be the Raganuga. Now it's just whether you are actually have that mood so you can call it Raganuga, or it's in pursuance of that. But the process that we've been given is that process. That's the problem, is we'll take something, whatever we're given, and then when we're talking about it, because we're being talking about it, so we appreciate that the level of bhava, that's where you're going to apply it. And so then so we'll be careful to always focus and try to develop pure devotion, you know, free from karma, jnana, and also, and appreciate that it's the sweetness and all that, the devotees, not the grandeur. Right? So then that aspect is already there. You're moving in that pursuance. Mm-hmm. Right? So where's the doubt? Problem is when they come and they've learned these things from Srila Prabhupada, then they're taking them and using the same terms now against Prabhupada's system, that there's something else. Mm-hmm. And so then where will you turn? Right? So to the Sahajiyas? You know, and generally speaking, that'll be the Radhakund Wallas. Because who comes and hangs out with the Navadvip Wallas, right? That generally doesn't happen. A few do, they get distracted, but it's very few. Like that. And, you know, Govardhan, they're not hanging out over there, you know, because it's too austere over there. At least Radhakund is, like, you know, kind of like a little city, so you can kind of, you know, the sweet shops, this place to eat. There's stuff happening there. You know, you can take a bath. You know, it's more happening. So then, you know, is that it? They're offering something that we're not? So that's the whole thing. You have to have that faith. And as soon as that goes and they're not following the Acharya, then as it mentions, then they fall from being, you know, fixed in devotional service to being anishta. Because then their activities will be, you know, unstable. Then their attractions will be unstable, or it'll just be sentimental, but not actually very real. Because if it's not parampara, it's not going to be transcendental. Right? It's just like this. It means, depending on how it's presented, does not the story of Romeo and Juliet invoke feelings? Right? Yeah. You know, it depends how you present it, or, you know, different things like that. So, you present Radha Krishna's pastimes from that angle, will it not produce feelings? You know, it's the origin anyway, so then why won't it? But if you want to develop and get involved in that, then you have to not be in that line. Because in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes the point that Sahajiyas aren't accepted by the Brajvasis as serious. So by following their path, you'll never get into Braj. You know, because they can't trust you. Because why are they there? Why would you take that up? Why would you say, oh, I'm worried about getting this and that? So now, how is it working? Is it I'm surrendering to Krishna? That please, no, I myself as the controller, I'm going to find a process by which I will get myself there, and then getting myself there, then I will be happy. So it's just cultivating the mundane position. Because otherwise, if that's the doubt, then when they would be surrendering to Krishna, that please let me develop the spontaneous love for you and the mood that the acharyas have given. And then follow your process you're following. Is not something different. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing, is because we are used to the external, we take it that the process of rag bhakti is also an external form. No, the external form is sadhana bhakti. Right? Rag is the attitude. Vaidhi is the attitude. So we don't want to just be absorbed in vaidhi, in the attitude. It means better that than not doing at all. Right? But the whole point is we know that it actually goes beyond. It's not just the rules. It's the meaning of pleasing Krishna. That's the whole point. So it's not that you need the rules to please Krishna. It's about pleasing Krishna. So how are we going to express that? Then you follow, unless you know, you follow the rules. Right? Mother Jashoda doesn't need a cookbook. Right? Okay. Does that make sense? You know, cookbooks are made based on what she cooks. Right? You know, it goes the other way around. Right?
When she cooks, it's always an expansion of love. It's always better and better. Each day is the same surprise, but it's
gets better. Yeah, tested. Yeah. Because you cook for Krishna, and then it will. It's unlimited. Yeah. Okay, so we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sama Veta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Vrinda ki.